Let the noise go right through you. Don't put up a resistance to it. If you resist it, it's going to get into your system. Think of your body and your mind as a big screen, like the screen on a window. Just as the breeze blows right through the screen without the screens catching it. So let the noise go right through without your mind catching it or your body catching it. Because after all, it doesn't destroy your breath. Your breath is still here. You can stay with your breath. We'd like it to be more quiet than it is, but that's not the way it is right now. So you deal with the situation as it comes. And the reason we're meditating is because the world is imperfect. If we waited for all conditions to be perfect for meditation, it'd be hard to gain release from suffering. It's in the midst of suffering that we look for the release from suffering. So always keep that in mind when conditions are less than ideal. A lot of meditation is having the right attitude. There are days when you're not in the mood to meditate, and you've got to get yourself in the mood. And each person has to have his or her own way of doing that. And when obstacles come in the meditation, you've got to have the right attitude to them as well. When difficulties come up, you've got to watch. You've got to look at what's going on until you catch sight of something that gives you an idea of a way around the obstacle. And then you give it a try, and if it doesn't work, well, you keep trying again, trying again. This is right effort. It's the right approach. It's one of the reasons why in the Forest tradition there's so many stories of times when teachers refuse to answer questions or refuse to explain things. And John Lee tells a story of when he was John Munn's attendant. And his duty after the meal in the morning was to straighten out Ajahn Mun's room. And Ajahn Mun would tell him every day, you didn't do it right. But he would never tell him what the right way was. And so John Lee finally came up with the idea that the hut in which Ajahn Mun lived was made out of leaves. At least the wall was made out of leaves. So he poked a hole in some of the leaves in a quiet corner and then watched when Ajahn Mun went into his room when he was rearranging things after John Lee had not arranged them properly. Where did he put things? And so the next day when it was time to go into the hut, he went again. This time he put everything where he remembered seeing Ajahn Mun put it. Then he went back out and watched at his little hole in the wall. And Ajahn Mun went in. I'm sure Ajahn Mun must have known that John Lee was watching. He looked right and left and didn't see anything out of place at all. So he just sat down, said his chants. And John Lee was satisfied that, one, he had pleased his teacher, and two, he'd figured out a way to do it. I had the same experience with Ajahn Fu. Many times my job was to straighten things out in his hut, and he would tell me I wasn't doing it right. But again, he wouldn't tell me the right way to do it, so I'd have to sneak a look here and sneak a look there. If I was too obvious, he wouldn't put things in the right place. But after all, I began to observe. And it was an important lesson. As a meditator, you've got to learn how to observe. And it's often, it often requires that you be ingenious in how you look at things. Once you develop this habit outside, then it starts working inside into the meditation. If you're the sort of person that has to have everything explained, everything pointed out to you, what are you going to do when you're meditating off on your own with your eyes closed and nobody to point things out to you? They can't even see what your problem is. You're the only one who can see it. So you're the one who has to figure out the solution, the way to get around it. And so what you're given as a meditator are the tools for getting around problems. Being mindful, being alert, being persistent. These are problem-solving tools. alert enough to see that there's a problem, mindful enough to remember, have you ever seen anything, any problem like this before? And if you have, you try the old solution. If the old solution doesn't work, okay, you can make note of that, and then use your ingenuity to see if you can figure out a new solution. Sometimes it's simply a matter of watching until it's almost out of the corner of your mind's eye. You see something you didn't notice before. That suggests an opening. You try that. And you just keep trying and trying and trying until you find something that works. Which is why the best meditation guides are not the ones with all the answers, but they teach you the approach. They teach you the attitude you should have, so that you can come up with your own answers. Because each person's mind has its own ins and outs. No matter how good a meditation guide is, it can't cover all the ins and outs of everybody's minds. What it can do is give you the basic principles. And you develop those principles, not only the techniques in the meditation, but also the attitude, the quality of your mind that's willing to look at problems, sit with problems, try solutions, make mistakes, learn from your mistakes. If you've got this attitude, it underlies success in your meditation. And I've noticed that it also goes along with being willing to laugh at yourself. People who can't laugh at themselves or take themselves too seriously never get very far in the meditation. Because what is the sense of humor? If not, one, the ability to see a mistake, and two, the ability to step back from things. To admit a mistake is a mistake, and be detached enough from it so that you're not, your pride and your self-regard are not tied up in the problem as well. So as a meditator, it's important that you develop the right attitude, develop the skills that are needed for becoming more skillful. It's like learning, the process of learning is itself a skill. It requires these qualities that we're working on in the meditation. So when you come up with an answer, remember, it may not necessarily be the answer, the way that you've got to breathe for the rest of your life, or the way you've got to conceive the breath for the rest of your life, but at least it works for now. And you store it away in your memory. And when a similar problem comes up in the future, you pull it out, if you can still remember it, and apply it. Sometimes it'll work, sometimes it won't. But if you remember that life doesn't consist of having a store of answers for everything, but it does require that you have the right attitude towards obstacles, the right attitude towards problems as they come up in the meditation. So you can step back, observe things, watch for a while, so that you're clear on what the problem is to begin with. Remember when I was a child and I first ran into Ann Landers' column in the newspaper. I was 10 years old. I was amazed that there was someone who seemed to have such wise answers to everybody's problems that people all over the country were writing to her for advice. As I got older, I began to realize that her job was not all that difficult. By the time people had written to her, they had formulated the problem. Once the problem was formulated, it was pretty easy to see what the solution would be. It's when the problem isn't even yet formulated in your mind. That's when it's really difficult. You don't know what's wrong. So the first order of business is to look at the situation, see precisely what is the matter. Where is their stress? Where is their craving? Those two elements right there help you formulate the problem pretty clearly. Once you get a sense of what the problem is and what it's related to, then it's a lot easier to try to figure out the solution. Sometimes it requires simply observing things for a while. And other times it requires that you're more active. trying to figure things out. Look at the problem from new angles. Which requires, of course, that the mind be very, very still. Still enough so you can begin to notice what your assumptions are. When you catch the mind in the process of acting on a particular assumption, you learn to question it. Is that really true? Does it have to be that way? Could it be some other way? This is one of the reasons why the Buddha said that a measure of a person's discernment is how that person approaches questions. How they formulate questions, how they go about trying to figure out which questions are worth asking and answering, which ones are not. And then how you go about an answer. As you work in the meditation, the important thing is you begin to master this process of overcoming obstacles. Because it's in that process that discernment develops. And it's important that you not get discouraged by obstacles, because it's through the overcoming of obstacles, again, that discernment develops. If you meditate without any obstacles, discernment doesn't have much of a chance. I noticed with the John Fuang students, so you'd get some people who'd come in, the minds would settle down very easily, everything was going very smoothly. And everybody else around them would be jealous, because most of the people had a lot more difficulty in getting the mind to settle down. But then you notice that these people, every now and then, they would run into a problem and they were at a total loss. Because up to that point, everything had just kind of gone on its own. As a result, they had no discernment. It's the people who have obstacles in their meditation and are not discouraged by them that develop discernment. It's also the people who are not afraid to take risks in experimenting with solutions. If you don't take risks, you never learn anything. So as we said this afternoon, we're not here to get the answer to how you should breathe or the answer to what you should do, steps 1, 2, 3, 4. It's learning how to get an answer that works right now. And sometimes you find you get answers that will work for a long period of time. Other times they're specifically for this situation. But in the process of arriving at that answer, you've developed the skills that you can apply all the time. The skill lies in the process of coming to answers, not in the activity of collecting answers. So when you sit down to meditate, don't tell yourself that you hope there'll be no obstacles tonight. Just tell yourself, hope you have the right attitude to the obstacles as they come. With that attitude, you've got what you need to meditate anywhere, in any situation, when the noise gets worse than it is now, when the pain in the body gets worse than it is now. You're not going to be faced, because you've got the right attitude for tackling the problem, whatever it is.